Blog Talk Radio.
Tiger DJ Southeast Vent coming at you from a place called Durham, North Carolina. And this is Black by Color Only on CNM Radio. On this show, I will discuss current events and issues that affect the black race and take on the apostles of blackness. Hopefully, you'll get something from this show. And if you have a question or a comment, make sure you season it well with respect. So don't come here being a fruit bat, as this is a fruit bat free program. You are listening to Black by Color Only. So how's everybody doing out there? Listen to my listening audience. How are you guys doing out there? Hope today finds you doing well. If you would like to be a guest on the show, the call-in number is 646-478-5284, 646-478-5284. And you can call in and talk about anything related to the bat. If you are a person who likes to come on here and cause trouble with excessive profanity, character assassinations, ad hominem attacks, gaslighting, trolling, just coming in to disrupt the show or whatever, then you are in danger of the curse of the fruit bat, which means that you will be kicked off the show. You will be booted off. Now, like I said a few weeks ago, if you are booted off today, you will be permitted to come on the next time I have a show. But I will not tolerate people coming on here and thinking they know everything and think they can just talk to me any kind of way or talk to guests any kind of way. That will put you in danger of the curse. Okay, now, when I say the curse, people, bear with me. I'm not talking about an actual curse. I don't believe in the hocus pocus and everything. That's just a figment of that's just a way with words that I have. You know, curse of the fruit bat means you will be kicked off this show. Simple. I'm not putting no curses on you. You're not gonna go in your kitchen and discover that all your food has gone rotten or your money has disappeared or anything like that. Okay. When I say the curse of the fruit bat, that just means you're going to get kicked off of the program. Okay, so as long as we understand that, well, folks, I'm back after being off last week and just want to remind everybody, next Saturday, I will not have a show. My wife and I, we are going out of town, spend some time together, and this show will pick up again on the 27th. So after today, I won't have a show until the 27th. But anyway, folks, I want to talk about something that really has gained my concern over the last several years, probably more than several years, and you probably last couple of decades, maybe the last three decades or whatever. And basically what I wanted to talk about is the condition of our children in this country, especially black children, especially the black children. Sometimes people get on here and they'll say, well, Vincent, why are you always talking about the black people? Why are you always talking about the black people? And, you know, once again, I have to tell them that I am a black person, and I do this out of concern and love for my fellow black people. You know, a lot of times people think when you're correcting someone that you hate them, and I do not hate black people. If I did hate black people, I would be hating myself. I really don't know where people get this thing that you're a black person and you're telling black people to get their act together, that means that you hate black people and that you hate yourself. You know, that's just a form of gaslighting that people like to do. You know, they tell you, oh, well, you're black, and why are you talking about black folks? And this means you hate yourself and you hate black people. No, it does not. In the Bible, it tells, in 1 Peter, the 4th chapter in the 17th verse, it says, judgment must begin at the house of God. Okay. And I really do believe that can go even further and say judgment must begin with the individual. Too many times what I see in our black communities and whatever is people who always want to deflect the blame off onto someone else. They always want to divert, you know, they want to blame all the ills that they're going through on some outside entity that is really not affecting them as they say they are. And, you know, they get these so-called, these pseudo-intellectual people up here, and they get to talking, and, you know, they get on, and they got their little suit and tie, and they get up there, and they start talking in long words and everything and stuff like this. Like, they really know what they're talking about, but they really do not. They don't know what in the world they're talking about. They're just, you know, flapping off at the yap, you know, adding some long words to their conversation to make it look like they know what they're talking about, to make themselves look intellectual, but they're really not intellectual. They really don't know what they are talking about. And then when someone as straightforward as myself, you know, heads up with them, they think, you know, oh, you are misinformed, you know. And see, I'll be honest with you. I'm not as eloquent as a lot of people. I do speak in long words sometimes. I'm not as eloquent as a lot of other people. I'm not the type of person you'll see standing in front of a crowd and, you know, riling up a crowd or anything like that, you know. But I like to be more straightforward in my talk. I don't like to beat around the bush. I like if someone asks me a direct question, I like to give people a direct answer. And I notice a lot of people don't do that, especially those on the left, you know, the apostles of blackness and all. They don't like to give a straight answer. You give them a yes or no question, and you're expecting a yes or no answer, but they don't know how to do that. They don't know how to give a straight answer. I see it all the time. You know, my wife is, she loves to watch little news clips on YouTube. And so many times I get frustrated because someone will ask somebody, like, if they're having a court case or something like that, and they're trying to ask a person, say, you know, did you do this? Did you do that? They say, well, what I perceive, no, we didn't ask you that. It's a yes or no question. Then they say, oh, I'm answering the question. No, you're not answering the question. Be direct in your answer. Now, once you give a direct answer, then you can go off into doing your explanations and all that. But really, that's not necessary. But just give the direct answer first. Then you can go off into your diatribe. But the thing that really bugs me, and I see this at the street level. I see this at the street level a lot, you know, is those of us in the black community, and folks, let me just say this once. Let me just say this. This just doesn't happen in the black community, okay? I see it a lot more prevalent in the black community, but this what I'm about to talk about today, it affects people in all kinds of communities, affects all races, all, you know, ethnicities, whatever. But right now, I want to hang up on black folks. And the thing that really bothers me about a lot of black folks is why our children are acting like a pack of animals. I mean, I'm like, you... And when you interact with these people and say, well, why is your child like this and why is your child like that? They give some stupid answer, you know, and it's almost like they're saying, well, you know, it's not my responsibility. It's somebody else's responsibility. hey there, Retta. You know what, Retta? I'm going to be honest with you. I'm just going to be straight up and honest with you. Cousin Coon might be a great name for a T-shirt. You know, I might put that on a T-shirt. Just say, I'm Cousin Coon. You know, but some events have happened of late that have that. I already knew what I was going to talk about on the show today, Tuesday. I already knew it. I said, yeah, I know what I'm going to talk about today. Since I might do that on a T-shirt. I just might do that, you know, just to be, Sarge. Sarge says, "Tis a gathering of coondom." But man, y'all giving me, man, I think I need to write this stuff down, boy. This is pretty good, man. y'all inspiring me to do some T-shirts. The Kingdom of Coondom. I like that. You know what? I just might put that on a T-shirt. I just might do that. But anyway, you all, I'm trying to get out my initial comments, okay? You know, y'all keep coming in here interrupting me in the chat room. And y'all might be like, well, then you shouldn't have your chat room up until you finish your initial comments. But that's okay. But some events have happened within the past couple of weeks and everything. I do a lot of internet surfing. Pick up on clips. I watch a lot of clips too on YouTube, but there was something that kind of touched me personally this week. My wife works at a daycare, and this is how I know this stuff goes on a broader spectrum, because my wife works at a daycare. She's worked there for about 20 years, and she was telling me this week that this week a parent came into her face and was accusing, well, the parent said that her child said that my wife had put this girl in a dark room and covered her mouth and, you know, and all this type of stuff. And what my wife was explaining was that last week when this so-called incident was supposed to have happened, they were having picture day. It was Friday of last week. And my wife said she had no problem out that little girl. The little girl didn't fuss or anything and whatever. She said the little girl is very loving. And I know my wife. I know my wife. I've been married to the woman going on 19 years now. And I know my wife. My wife is one of the most inoffensive people you will ever meet. You know, I'm just going to be straight up with you. She is one of the most inoffensive people. My wife is not one of those in-your-face type people and everything. Although she doesn't take no crap from anyone. But anyway, so this parent gets up in her face and says, you know, make these false accusations against my wife. And my wife said, no, that didn't happen. You know, I didn't have no problem out the little girl, you know, whatever, stuff like that. And this is the classic line that I hear a lot of black parents say about their children. I believe my child could be because my child doesn't lie. I think I've heard that statement so many times that if I had a quarter of a penny for every time I've heard that statement, I'd probably be a rich man right now. My child doesn't lie. And so because my wife has had incidents like this before, you know, she comes home, she shares it with me, she vents, whatever, I sit there and listen to her, and, you know, I don't like it because a lot of times when incidents like this happen, not only does the parent believe their child over anyone else, but if the parent has a complaint and it gets to the director of the daycare, the director of the daycare will believe the parent before they believe the teacher. That's the frustrating thing about this. And so when you do that, and let's say you have a child who is misbehaving, you might have to put them in timeout or whatever, you know, I think timeout is a timeout. But timeout, you know, we had timeout when I was growing up. You know, our parents took timeout to whoop our tails, you know. But when, you know, the child acts up and they might go home and tell their parent, yeah, put me in there. And then the parent is like, what? They did this to you? And they just automatically believe their child. Without trying to get the other side of the story. So they come up, they get into teacher's face or whatever, and they say, my child said this. And then when the teacher is trying to defend themselves, they say, well, I don't believe you. I believe my child because my child doesn't lie. And then the word gets to the director, and then the director comes in. They don't set their workers to the side and say, you know what? We understand that you did not do this. This parent is upset. Basically she's being a bonehead, you know, but no matter what, I have your back. They don't do that. Basically what they do, they will take the side of the parent, and the parent can make whatever false accusation they want about the teachers or whatever. And their child, the child is the point of what needs to be dealt with. But the child doesn't get dealt with because it's like the parent is the one, not the parent, but the teacher is the one who is in the fault. You know, the parent comes up, complains to the director, and the director will listen to the parent because they have this stupid notion that the customer is always right. And I don't know who came up with that phrase, but they need to stop saying it because all they care about is getting more customers in so that they can make more money. And they're willing to do anything to kiss the tails of their customers in order to satisfy the customers so that they can get more money. But in the meantime, because the child is not dealt with, basically, the people who run these schools, the principals, the vice principals, the directors or whoever else, they have become enablers of bad behavior because they're not telling the parents, okay, parents, listen up. Your children are bad. Okay, we're not going to mince words. Your children are bad. Now, we need your help in order to deal with your children. But the directors don't do that. They will sit there and take up for their parents, and they might say something like, oh, so my teacher said something that triggered you, or, you know, some mess like that. And then when, you know, they have their meeting and whatever, and then they'll pull the teacher to the side and say, now you need to understand something. This parent is probably not lying. You probably did something to set this parent off. You know, you need to watch how your facial expressions, and you know, they say a bunch of good folks. I'm not making this stuff up. I'm not making this up. But then, so now you're just taking off a layer of discipline that needs to be applied to that child. And now that child, instead of the teachers and the daycare workers or whoever having control of their classrooms, it's basically the children that run the classrooms. And then not only that, it's like the teachers, the daycare workers, they're between a rock and a hard place. They need to control the kids, but if they do, and it doesn't have to be, you know, anything out of the way, they might just tell the child, okay, you're going to sit right here, or they might just grab, take them by the ear and sit them down or something like that. No, you can't do that. But yet and still, when the school officials come into the classroom and they see the kids acting like a pack of banshees, they're sitting there, well, how come you don't have control over your classroom? You're the adult. Well, the reason why I don't have control over the classroom is because you tell me not to do what I need to do to discipline these kids, and that is why they are acting like a pack of animals. But now you're trying to put the blame on me for not disciplining these kids. So if I discipline them, I don't even have to lay a hand on them. All I have to do is say, stop that. That people got problem with that. Problem with that. And then if your child is one of those who just acts up a lot and whatever, of course, that child is going to be the one that receives the most discipline. You get parents coming in saying, well, why is everyone always picking on my child? Well, it's because you suck as a parent. You don't deal with this behavior at home. Then the child brings that behavior to the school. And then when someone gets on that child, you want to say people are picking on your child. These teachers are not going around saying, let's see. Yeah, I don't like him. I'm just going to pick on him. I'm just going to make it hard for him. Why are you always getting on my child? Why are you always getting on? Well, we're getting on your child because your child is always starting fights. Your child is always disrupting the class. And something needs to be done about it. But you're not doing your job at home. And I've had, there have been several incidents. My wife is, you know, my wife has an accent because she's from, you know, she's from Africa. And she's had people mock her accent, you know, but nobody says anything about it. The teachers don't, the administrators, they don't do anything about it. They always try to make it like it's my wife's fault. Now, my wife is content to work up there. We got a reason why she's still working there and everything. And once things get taken care of, you know, we're going to deal with that. But this is just an example of what other teachers go through in the school systems. And these kids, they basically, this is one of the main reasons why I don't believe in over-regulations in the schools, is because basically what they are doing is telling the kids that you can do whatever you want to, and the teachers have their hands tied behind their backs. And every year, every single year, they come up with a new rule. They come up with new rules. And now you, and then see the school where my wife works at. And let me tell you all something. Let me just say something, just in case this gets out to people at the school where my wife works at, because this has happened before. Don't be trying to threaten my wife's job over what you hear on this program. Your beef is with me, not with her. First of all, I don't work there. So you can't be using me to try to get to her. Okay? I'm just going to let you know that, just in case you're listening, because you know who you are. You know exactly who you are. So don't be trying to get on, you know, because, you know, one time I talked about where she worked at, and they were like, well, tell your husband not to be talking about us. And I told my wife, I said, I don't work for them. You got a problem with me, you come to me. Don't be trying to threaten my wife. But anyway, the school where my wife works at is a so-called Christian academy. This is if any of you all are familiar with Tracy McGrady, this is the same school that he graduated from. This is the same school he graduated from. And it is beyond me how you can call yourself a Christian academy, but you're going to sit here and take the side of parents who lie to you, instead of doing the right thing and saying, okay, we got a complaint from a parent, but I know you didn't do anything wrong. You know, I got your back. But instead, you would rather throw your workers under the bus, satiate some parents. And my sister, Retta, she's saying, this is why I'm leaving the school system. I've had enough of ratchet baby kids. I'm so sick of attending six-hour workshops for what a belt and good old-fashioned discipline at home would cure. Exactly. We have to deal with this crap day and day out. And see, here's the thing, too. Nobody's getting in the face of these parents and telling them, we can't work no miracles with your child. Like I said, the school that my wife works at is a supposed Christian school. And her director seems to love to bring in these really out of hand kids. These kids that are just far and above the rest of them. Some of these kids have mental problems. And they come in and they just act up. Some of these kids are even too old to be in a daycare. And I keep asking my wife, why are these kids in the daycare? Well, we took them down. We took them to the academy. You know, the academy is from kindergarten to 12th grade. And we took them to the academy. They didn't want to deal with them here. So we got to take them up here. Some of these teachers have to deal with these kids for 2 or 3 years. Now, when that child gets of age, they need to be gone. Now, if you can't handle them in the regular school, then that's your problem. But yet and still, her director brings in these problem kids, kids who should not be intermingling with the other kids. Some of these kids have special problems. But she thinks, you know, hey, we're Christians here, you know, and she would even tell them, don't say that the parents are lying. Well, they are. Oh, don't say these are bad kids. Don't speak that. See, that's that word faith nonsense where they say, you know, don't speak negative. Don't say this about them. Don't say that. But see, here's the problem with that philosophy. You can sit there and say, no, I'm not going to speak this on this child. You are a good child. You are a great child. You are well behaved. And the children don't change at all. The situation does not change at all. Don't say that about this child. Don't say that they're bad kids. No, they are bad kids. And you need to get some gumption to talk to their parents. And see, a lot of these parents, they're not going to come to a parent-teachers meeting or something like that. But you still need to get in the face of these parents. Matter of fact, you at least send them a note. At least send them a note and say, look, parents, you know, we need you at these parent teachers. We know that you're not at the parent teachers association. These are your kids. You should be concerned about the kids. The responsibility of your children should not fall on us. We're just here to hold your kids so you can go to work and fulfill your career. But when these kids go home, they go home with you. Now, what are you doing at home to help curtail this bad behavior? And a lot of these kids, the mental problems that they have, it has nothing to do with what they were, how they were born or anything like that. It's because they are living in a place, they are living in homes where they're not being disciplined. The parents themselves weren't disciplined. The parents themselves haven't even grown up. They're not mature. And so basically, you got grown folks with childlike mentalities being parents to kids who are going to grow up with childlike mentalities as well. Basically, the parents are not mature, and they're helping to raise immature children. And I see this a lot in black communities. And we think that if we ignore the problem, see, this is one of the biggest mistakes in all of history. We think if we ignore the problem, it will just go away. It's not going to go away. You need to deal with it straight on. Let's say you want to build a bridge across a river. Let's say you want to build a bridge across a river. But in that river is a horde of man-eating crocodiles. Now, in order to build that bridge, you have to lay the base down into the riverbed, you know, to the bottom, you know, and everything. That's going to put you in contact with the crocodiles. Now, you can sit there and say, oh, we'll just ignore the crocodiles. You know, they'll eventually go away. They'll see us working. They'll be like, oh, they're building a bridge. Okay, let's go. Nah, you got to deal with them crocodiles so you can build that bridge. And see, this is what is going on in a lot of our black communities, black schools. This is why kids are acting like a bunch of animals, because you have parents who do not want to be parents, or they're not even ready to be parents. They're immature, and they're raising children to be immature when they get older too. You need to set limits on your children. There needs to be, no one's saying you have to go upside their head constantly on a daily basis. You need to set rules. You need to set borders. During COVID, some of these children would come to the daycare, you know, for their remote learning, and they would have to bring their computers, you know, and then they would have to sign in to their classes, and then, you know, their teachers would teach them remotely. My wife told me there was a group of kids every single day would come in. They wouldn't know their passwords. Their computers wouldn't be charged up. And if the kids didn't, you know, their computers weren't charged up, once again, the director would get mad at the teachers, at her workers. Oh, give them a charger. Give them a charger. Now, me, this might sound a little bit, you know, out of hand or whatever, but this is just how I feel. I'd be let the little rascals fail. I'm not going to be responsible for getting a charger for these kids, and they can't, as soon as they get home, their parents don't tell them, hey, charge your computer so it'll be ready in the morning. This is your password. If you can't remember it, I'll put it on a little piece of paper. You can put it in your pocket. Someone asks you for what your password is. All you have to do is reach in your pocket and say, okay, here's my password. Boom, boom, boom. I'm in there. But my wife said every single day they would come in. And my wife would say, well, what's your password? I don't know. You don't know. It's been 2 months. And she would say every day, their computers wouldn't be charged. And I'm like, that's the simplest thing. All the parents had to do is say, hey, what? How lazy are you if you can't do a simple thing like plug a computer in the wall so it could charge and be ready for the next day? I don't understand these parents. And see, here's the thing, too. The thing that really bothers me is, are the directors and the principals and the vice principals, school officials, enabling this type of behavior instead of going to the parents and saying, hey, every day your child comes here, their computer is not charged, they don't know their password. They're going to put that off. They're going to put that responsibility off on their employees. In other words, they throw their employees up under the bus and just let the parents be bad parents. I don't understand these people. And then they're going to have enough nerve to call themselves Christians. Folks, you need to get in the face of these parents. And see, this is a problem today. A lot of school officials are afraid of the parents, and the parents are afraid of their children. And see, bad parenting leads to an incident that I saw a few days ago. You all have probably seen this. I forget where this school is located, but I saw this video of this girl. She was pepper spraying her teacher. Why was she pepper spraying her teacher? Because the teacher confiscated her phone. Why did the teacher confiscate her phone? Because they were about to take a test, and the teacher believed the girl was trying to cheat. So he confiscated her phone. She pulls out a vial, a can of pepper spray, and sprays the teacher. I think she sprayed the teacher 3 times. Teacher runs out into the hallway. You got a bunch of no good kids sitting there. Look at this. Look at this. And they over there recording. Instead of coming up and saying, hey, 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 don't do that to the teacher. Once again, bunch of black kids. Bunch of black kids. And not only that, the other teachers, they were slow in getting this girl off of this teacher. He's kneeling down in the hallway. She's coming to get her phone. He snatched that phone back away from her. Them teachers should have been on top of that girl immediately. And she's sitting there, can I get my phone? Can I get my phone? The teacher's like, no, use pepper spray. No, can I get my phone? Bad parenting. Let me tell you what parents should be doing in this case, in this situation. Now, you all might disagree with me, but I don't think cell phones should be allowed in schools except for if they're owned by the teachers and the principals. I don't think kids should be bringing cell phones to school at all. And, yeah, part of the reason why I say that is because when I went to school, I didn't have a cell phone. And I came out pretty good. They don't need cell phones in the schools. The parents should say, when the child leaves to go to school, the parents should do an inspection of the backpack. Say, hey, wait a minute, this is your cell phone. No, your cell phone is staying here. You're not bringing your cell phone to school. It's staying here. You're going to school to learn. And you're not going to be fellowshipping with your friends on this cell phone. your cell phone stays here. Boom. Have a good day. Now, if the child happens to sneak the cell phone or whatever, someone should be posted at the doors of the school and say, okay, we're going to do an inspection. Oh, I don't want them inspecting my child's backpack. Well, you know, we have a no cell phone policy, so we're going to inspect your child's backpack. Because you're not doing your job at home, we're going to do it here. Oh, okay, you got your cell phone here? Okay, this is going to stay here until it is time for you to leave school. Now, when the child gets home, there should be rules saying, okay, little Johnny, little Susie, no cell phone till you finish doing your homework. Where's your homework? Show me your homework. And when you finish your homework or whatever, then you can have your cell phone. But suppose I have so much homework, I can't get on my cell phone. Oh, well, it sucks to be you now, doesn't it? But you're not going to get your cell phone until you do your schoolwork. And you're not bringing your cell phone to school with you. Now, you might disagree with me about that, but that's my philosophy. I know if I had a child, that's exactly what I would do. I'm just saying. I'm just saying that's just how I see it. But a lot of parents are not being parents. And then when someone actually gives your child the due discipline that is a consequence of their actions, now the parents want to act like they're super parents all of a sudden. What are you doing to my child? What are you doing to my child? Well, I'd like to pose that question to you. What are you doing with your child? There's a scripture in the Bible that says foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction will drive it from him. I think it's Proverbs 21:18. I'm not sure. Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction will drive it far from him. The reason why we see our children acting like animals today is, number one, parents are not being parents, and number two, other officials are enabling parents to be bad parents. Now, of course, you're going to have those few kids that are going to act up and whatever. Yes, you deal with them. But it seems like most of the kids are displaying this bad behavior. And a lot of people say, oh, they have behavioral problems and they have this and that and everything. But you know what? First of all, that girl that pepper sprayed her teacher, she should have been expelled. I guarantee you she's probably still going to school. Because all they do, now, if the teacher had done something and thrown that girl to the ground and maybe she had gotten hurt as a result, that teacher would be suspended. Going back to my wife's daycare a few months ago, one of the kids, one of these really acting out kids, he gets mad. He picks up a toy and throws it at one of the teachers. Hits her in the thigh. She gets bruised in the thigh. Now the teacher, before she even could think, she picked the toy up and threw it back. And it caused a small cut on the kid's head. It wasn't anything bad. He didn't have to go to the hospital or anything like that. You know, they suspended that teacher. But that boy was back in the school the next day. See, we are enabling these kids to be bad. And we're wondering, well, what do we do? What do we do? We need to put some firm discipline to them. Now, if you want to act like your brain is in your rear end, then it's the responsibility of a responsible adult to set fire to your mind. And I have nothing against teachers whooping kids in the classroom. I don't want no one whooping my kids. Well, then you want your kids to be little devils. That's exactly what you want. Because when you send your child to school, the same type of discipline they get at home, you should give some of that to the teacher and say, look, at home, when he lies, we put the paddle to his tail. If he lies here, you have my authority to do the same thing. Can't do that. Oh, they're just little darlings. You know, society has failed them and, you know, and all this stupid mess they say. Earlier this year, we had an incident in, what was it, Newport News. Six-year-old boy brings a gun to school and shoots his teacher. And almost killed the teacher. Now, this teacher was, I mean, she should have been given some kind of award because even though she was wounded, she was shot through her hand, and I think the bullet hit her in her abdomen or her chest. But even with all that, she helped to evacuate the students. She spent some time in a hospital. The boy almost killed her. And so they were talking about charging the parent. Now, this one guy on my job, he said, oh, that's a white parent. You know, only white kids do that. And I'm sitting there. I said, you know what? I'm not even going to make a big deal about it. I'm on my job and everything. I'm not going to sit here and, you know. But I said, yeah, that's what they all say. They always say it's a white child. Found out this week. Saw the mother for the first time, black woman. And she's up there talking about, oh, he has ADHD. You should see him at home. He's hard to handle at home. Okay, well, here's my thing. How many children do you know with ADHD pick up a gun and go and shoot their teacher with it? Not only that, a six-year-old child. And they talk this stuff like it's, oh, that's why he did that. Oh, okay, everything is okay now. How did he get that gun in the first place? Don't even try to explain, oh, no, it you know, he got ADHD, that's why he did. No, how many kids do you know? But ADHD go to their schools and shoot it up. I mean, really. For real. Schools call up. And what happened to good old-fashioned head shaving? My dad find out I was acting up in school. Out came the clippers. Oh, no, that's abuse. No, you shouldn't embarrass your children like that. That's abuse. That's not showing love to your children. Now, some of these punishments that parents have, I think they are a little extreme, but still. Like I said, the Bible says, foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction will drive it far from him. Which means you need discipline. No one's saying you got to get bloodthirsty and, you know, rip your child's head off and break their arm and cause them to get stitches in their head or anything like that. Nobody's saying that. You can be firm enough with your discipline to the point that when your child acts up, all that needs to be said is, I'm going to call your parents. Or if they're doing it in front of their parents, all their parent has to do is give them a stern-looking side eye. If you apply the discipline right, you're not going to have to whoop your kids too much. Really, you won't. And no one, and I'm not advocating getting bloodthirsty with the whoopings. I'm not, but I do believe in whoopings. I do believe in spanking children. I do believe in that. But I was sitting there listening to this lady, and she said, oh, my child's got ADHD. And was like, you know, oh, he, you know, he ain't know what he was doing. He knew what he was doing. And they had given warnings about this kid before. She, the mother, this is the thing that got me. the boy was accused of taking one of the teacher's cell phones and throwing it to the ground, almost shattered the cell phone. This is what the mother said. The mother said, well, my child needed help. And he came to the teacher and asked her for help, and she wouldn't give him the help. And so my child was like, oh, fine. And he threw his hands in the air and knocked the phone out of her hand. I said, you lying. You are lying. You are raising a little devil. Yeah, she said, the child was like, okay, fine. And he threw his hands in the air, and that knocked the phone out of the teacher's hand. But the word is that the kid took the phone and threw it to the ground, and they said he almost shattered the phone. But see, we sit here, we make these excuses for these kids because we want to absolve ourselves of the responsibility of disciplining them. And we think if we ignore the problem, it's just going to go away. One day we're going to look up and these children are going to come to school with angel wings and halos above their heads, strumming little harps. And we think that by throwing money at the situation, see, this is another thing, you know, people are like, oh, we need more money for these schools. We need more money for the schools. But it seems like the more money the schools get, the worse they get. And I don't know why people haven't figured that out yet. They haven't put one and two together and said, wait a minute, something here is not right here. We keep giving money to the schools, but the schools are getting worse. Anybody notice that? Anybody else notice that? I mean, for real? You see, says, if I was a principal, I would never want an all-black school. I would rather have a school of all Asians, to be honest. Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that, too. Because these black kids, even in the Christian schools, you know, people, you know, they're always pushing Christian schools. And I have no problem with people pushing Christian schools. I really don't. But if you're going to push Christian schools, you need to have teachers who are going to run those schools with Christian principles. Don't sit there and ignore the problems of the kids. Now, this incident with my wife this week, her director was going to call my wife and this lady in for a meeting. And when my wife told me that, I was like, oh boy, here we go. Because see, every time my wife gets called in a meeting with these parents, her director always takes the side of the parent. And I was like, oh boy, let me steel myself for this. And so I think it was Wednesday. I asked my wife, I said, so how did your meeting go? My wife said, there was no meeting. I said, really? Said, yeah, the parent didn't even show up. Said the director called the parent, but the parent didn't even answer her phone. And her director said that she was going to suggest that she take her child to another daycare. I was like, and I was dumbfounded when I heard that because I was like, what? She actually sounds like she has a little inkling of defense for one of her teachers for once. I'm like, oh, okay. But found out this lady, she had been kicked out of another daycare, because they said she was accusing another daycare, a previous daycare, said they were always calling her to come to change her child's diaper, calling her at work. I said, now, I believe that's a lie, too, because daycare workers are trained to, they're trained to change diapers. And to be honest with you, I don't think this lady was relaying something that her child said, told her. I think this lady was just making this stuff up herself. I don't think the child made it up, although I could be wrong, but I really don't think the child made up these false accusations against my wife. I think this parent was the one that made up that story. And they said she came by yesterday, to get the rest of her daughter's things, but they wouldn't let her in the building, you know, and that's a security reason. And the vice principal of the school told my wife, said, man, this lady is a mess. And I'm like, find time someone finds out, you know. And that's how I see it. If you're having problems, if you think these teachers are messing with your kids and everything, and they're abusing your kids and everything, take your little nasty kids, take your little nasty snotty nosed kids out of here and take them somewhere else. And you let somebody else deal with them. Don't bring them here. But that's the problem with a lot of these daycares and public schools, even private schools. You know, people say private schools, you know, they're better and everything, and in some ways they are. But keep in mind that a lot of the people who are teaching and being principals in these public schools, they got their in these private schools, excuse me, they got their experience in the public schools. And so they're going to bring those same rules and regulations right there into the private schools. And like I said, if you're one of those people that work at the school that I used to work at, or you're working at a daycare where my wife works at, don't be taking this out on my wife. You got a problem with me, you come to me. If you want to say anything to my wife about this, you tell my wife, say, we'd like to talk to Vincent. Don't be telling her to tell me what not to say on my program, because this is my program. And it's not very Christian-like to extort people to do the same, to do the things that you want them to do. That you know, in the Bible, it calls that witchcraft. It's a controlling spirit. You want to control people. Tell them not to say this. It sounds almost like what you see the liberals doing in the political field, but I digress. And I told my wife, I said, I don't work for you. I don't work for y'all. Y'all fired me back in 2011. I said, I'm free for y'all. And you can use my wife to threaten, you know, you can use her and say, you know, threaten her job and everything by what I say here. It ain't happening. Because your dirt needs to be exposed, because you are the main reason why these kids are acting the way they are. Okay, my first hour rant is over. My first hour rant is over. Let me go into the advertisements, and when I come back, I might have a few other things to say, and then I will hit the phones. You are listening to Black by Color Only on CNM Radio.
For the past few months, we have now heard from our good friend and mentor, our very own Uncle Bing Fisher, that he has been around, though very busy, starting businesses and trying to get things going where he is. So his show has been put on hiatus for now, but in the coming month or so, we are looking to see him return to CNM, as he is about to retire and will give him more time to let us know all the things that he has a good ear for hearing. Bing's mellow voice and his expertise in engineering, along with his love of America, keeps us all informed as to what we should be doing and why the things are happening here in America as they are. The only side that seems to have consequences anymore are the right. The left can do anything they want, then blame it on the right, and always laying the blame where it shouldn't be, and they always get away with it. This has to stop. Listen to our very own Uncle Bing Fisher when American by Design returns soon on Sundays, where America always wins. Conservative Nation Media, or CNM, is looking to bring in new shows so we can reach more people. We report the truth, not the spin of the liberal mainstream media.
We worry because laws are not being enforced, and if you tell the truth, you could lose everything. You can't even walk in once safe neighborhoods. You are likely to get killed doing that. Right now we have two shows, NWCR Radio and Black by Color Only. American by Design is on hiatus. We believe in God, law and order, and the Constitution. We believe our borders must be closed to illegals, and there are only two sexes, and we honor our veterans and our boys in blue too. If you like expressing the truth and love for America, send us an email to Conservative Nation Media, all one word, 2017@gmail.com. Tell us your show ideas and we will get back with you. We are Conservative Nation Media, where America always wins. Join us today.
Welcome back to the show. If you would like to be a guest, the call-in number is 646-478-5284, 646-478-5284. And before I, you know, get to the phones and whatever, I'm have a just a little slight little change. Well, not slight, but have a little change of pace from what I was talking about, you know, the discipline of our children and everything. I was listening to something today. And people were saying, we all know that Donald Trump is up for re-election, and you know all this stuff. You know the charge that he raped this lady in a dressing room, in a what was it, a Macy's or a Nordstrom's, one of them fancy stores. You know, I mean, this mess is just bogus. And from what I heard, the lady who accused Donald Trump of raping her, she was 60 years old when this incident was supposed to have happened. And she said she was in a dressing room. Now, I'm like this. If somebody is sexually assaulting you in a dressing room, a dressing room is in a pretty open area. All you had to do is say, hey, this guy is messing with me. You know, somebody help me. You know, that's why I think these charges against Donald Trump are bogus. They're just trying to keep him from running the election, from running for election. But I keep hearing people saying that Donald Trump is too controversial. He's too controversial. We don't need someone that controversial. The only reason why Donald Trump is, quote unquote, too controversial is because the news media made him that way. And when I say they made him that way, they're the ones saying that he's causing too much controversy. Donald Trump has his flaws. Don't get me wrong. Every president does. But I don't see Donald Trump as being any more controversial than anyone else. And he has every right. He has every right to speak his mind or whatever. You know, like I said, some of the things he says, I wish he wouldn't say or whatever. But he is no more controversial than anyone else. The news media created that atmosphere in which people now think that Donald Trump is so controversial. They just don't want him to run for president anymore. They're trying to besmirch his reputation. And really, you know, if it was me in Donald Trump's place, I would file a major lawsuit against the news media and whatever. You know, of course, Donald Trump, he has enough money and stuff like that. But if I was in his position, I would come up with a major lawsuit. Because they have really ran his name into the ground. And that's why everybody's like, oh, Donald Trump is so controversial. No, y'all made him that way. Y'all gave him the appearance of being controversial. Y'all were the ones who gaslighted him and threw all kinds of false accusations against him. And now you want to say, oh, he's too controversial. We can't have him being president anymore. Donald Trump is no more controversial than anyone else. He has his ways. Of course, everybody does. And And, you know, this garbage about Clarence Thomas. People have been trying to get rid of Clarence Thomas for more than 30 years now. Some little slight thing, you know, some little slight vague accusation comes up against, you know, these people that, come on, y'all, come on. We know why you all are so caught up in this, because you, the two most hated people in America right now, as far as liberals are concerned, are Donald Trump and Clarence Thomas. And then when you say, well, why are you all so against, you know, the things that they said, the things that they done. Okay, what are the things that they said and what are the things that they done? I mean, for real. Come on. What is it that they said and that they done for you to hate these people so much? You don't know why. And you come up with some packaged story from the news media, and you say, this is why, you know, and you don't even know what you're talking about. Well, Donald Trump said that Mexicans are rapists and murderers. He never said that. Donald Trump said that there were good, that there are the white supremacists were fine people. He never said that. And they try to dress it up and say, well, when he said it like this, no, he did not say that Mexicans are rapists. He didn't say that white supremacists are fine people. He never said that. What about when he said, you know, he likes to grab women by the kitty cat? He never said that. He never said it. Now, I'm not doing this as a defense forum for Donald Trump, okay? But people hate this man so much that they're willing to believe any lie that's said about him at the drop of a hat without sitting there saying, okay, let me look into this and see if this is actually what's going on. They're not going to do that. But, you know, folks have a selective belief system. They'll believe what they want to believe. They have a selective outrage system. They'll get outraged at whatever they feel like getting outraged about. And that's the country we live in right now. And one thing I do not like about this country, though,
in the new economy, average people are becoming millionaires faster and easier.
Folks, I don't know how that came up. But one thing I really do not like about this country is how many fruit bats keep flying around here. The fruit bat alert that lets you know I'm about to go to the phones. If you're on if you're coming on the phones and you want to, you know, have a dialogue with the host, you know, don't bring the excessive profanity, the ad hominem attacks, the character assassinations, the gaslighting, the trolling, the disruptions, you know, because if you do, you know, I'm just gonna let you know right now, you best hang up right now, because if you don't, I will be happy to oblige you, and you will suffer the curse of the fruit bat. So, you know, I don't care if you agree with me or disagree with me. Just be respectful when you come on this program. Having said all that, I think I know who this is right here. That number looks familiar. Let me bring him on. Hello, hello. What is up?
Hello, Vincent. How you doing, man?
What is going on, man?
It was really hectic around here, you know? Anytime you're not on, these carnivore bats just go from crazy.
I mean, for real.
Yeah, it just, well, I tell you. But anyway, there's been some interesting things in the news. And I don't understand the ideology of somebody who's using self-defense to restrain a damn idiot who's savagely trying to harm people on the subway. Yeah. And this idiot loses their life in doing so. And you want to charge the person who was defending himself with murder. That's a bunch of bull crap. You know, here's the point.
Yeah.
This person in New York and the Marine, Mr. Penny, and he went after this black man who was big and vicious looking.
Yeah.
He had 42 previous encounters with the legal system.
Exactly.
Yes. He should have been in jail. If he was
in jail,
he'd be living right about now.
Yep.
No, but they let these people, and have you watched the video clips of these idiots that's pushing people in front of the train, and if they can't push them in front of the train, they'll push them in the side of the moving subway train.
Yep.
And nothing
happened.
They said
he tried to push an old lady. They said he tried to push an old lady in front of a train once before.
And they did nothing to him. That's why I come out and say, women, you need to carry your weapons. Carry one on your side, one in your bra. Your brassiere, and have a 6-inch hat pin in your hair.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And using them, the savages.
I like that hat pin idea. I love that. I love that one.
Because one of them get you down, attempting to rape you, and start feeling comfortable that he's got you down, pull that hat pin out and stab him dead in the neck.
I mean,
to the
really?
Back end of the neck, where you can pierce that spine. That spinal cord. That's what you got to do.
Yeah.
Then take some of the bits and put it on your, rub it on your clothes so you can have some DNA evidence. Because you know these leftist prosecutors, they would say that you was opening your legs and all that shit trying to entice somebody to rape you.
Well, see, I just lost my train of thought. You sound like you're talking kind of smart right now. You know, I love that hat pin idea. I love that rub the blood on your clothes so they can have some DNA evidence. That sounds like somebody who's talking kind of smart. I saw the clip that you left on my wall about the 24-year-old police officer. Female police officer that got shot and killed at her home by these four hoodlums, all of them except for one who was 16 years old, all of them were 19 years old. And this was a gorgeous black woman. I mean, I was like, why in the world is she being a police officer? You know, but she got shot and killed by four black thugs, but nobody's saying anything about it.
Well, that's the way it is. They use black privilege. They use that privilege.
And that thing just hurt me to my heart when I saw that. But everyone wants to concentrate on the Marine who choked the life out of this black man who got on the train and said, you know what, I don't care if I'm going to die. I don't care if you kill me. I don't care if you die, whatever, you know. And when someone comes up on there and they're talking like that, that's going to initiate a defensive response from somebody because you're like, I don't know what this guy's going to do, you know. But by the mere fact that it was a white guy that choked out a black guy, all of a sudden this is national news. But we don't hear anything about the black thug that gunned down that police officer. And I think another female police officer, I think within the last couple of days, she was gunned down. And I'm sitting there
like, look at the black idiot that was on the subway car attacking white women. Remember, I sent you a clip on that. So we have the white woman trying to get up and get away from him, and he grabs her hair and pulls her back down.
Yeah.
To sit next to him.
And that's a hate crime.
Completely out of control. That is a hate crime.
Yeah, it's a hate crime. And I think it was another guy. He shot, I need to get my stories together. He shot and killed two officers simply because they were white. And I think they're going to get him busted on hate crimes. But the thing about it, it's not making national news as if it would have been if it was the other way around. See, a white person, you can't choke out a black person. I don't care if you're defending yourself or whatever. It's an act of racism, you know, because we black people, we suffered so long and we've gone through all this and everything. And white people, they need to leave us alone, you know. But I'm like this, if I don't care if you're black, white, Puerto Rican, candy stripe, like my friend ABL says, I don't care what you are. You know, if you're threatening my life, my family's life, other people's lives, I'm going to do what I can to neutralize the threat. And that's basically what that Marine did on the subway. It's unfortunate
that
the man ended up getting killed. Yeah.
And why come they didn't charge the other three and help holding down? Like they did with that George Floyd case with that cop. They wanted to charge every cop in the damn neighborhood with the death of George Floyd. And I know they're different municipalities. I know they're different congregations of stupidity, Minneapolis compared to New York, but they all stupid.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, these things go on quite often. The news media, which is the most systemic racist organizations that there are, with their use of adjectives, they are culprit. They are complacent in all this mess.
Yeah.
I was happy to see the judge. One judge ruled that 18 and 20-year-olds can't be barred from buying handguns. You know, those who want to disarm Americans, they don't like that. You got another case up there in Washington State where the governor signed a law saying that if you don't offer up your kids to allowing the government to take away minors from parents if they refuse to agree to gender assignments. I mean, can you think of that?
I mean,
the government take away minors from parents if they refuse to agree to gender transition surgery.
Yeah.
This is Governor Jay Inslee, a Democrat in Washington.
Yep.
How ridiculous can he get? What's wrong with the people in Washington? Has this state been taken over by aliens? Wait a minute. They've taking possession of your body, your brain?
I don't know. State of Washington might get a lot of UFO sightings. I don't know. They probably do.
Listen at this.
You know?
It says the newly signed law would allow the government to hide the whereabouts of runaway children who claim to be seeking sex changes or abortions, meaning no one can protest the state-sanctioned kidnapping of children. They don't kidnap your child.
Yep. That's what it is. That's all it is. State-sanctioned kidnapping. That's all it is. And someone's asking me, said, Vincent, have you heard of Bishop Larry Gaiters? No, I don't think I have. What's he about, bring it, boy? Let me get this other caller on here while, you know, that question's being answered. I don't know why it takes so long. Okay. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show.
Man, you know, you have to reconsider a core tenet of your program here. I'd like to submit this for your consideration. Now, I know that you talk about fruit bats. And, you know, fruit bats kind of fly in erratic patterns, and that might be understandable. But fruit bats are vegetarian. They eat fruit. In doing so, in their feces, they spread seeds, compost, which helps to grow and nutrient other living growing things, and they perform a useful function. Now, what do liberals and progressives perform that is as useful as that? The species they spread has no nutritional value whatsoever.
Well, yeah.
So you might have to reconsider this fruit bat, because fruit bats have a purpose and they're useful.
Well, you know, it might still be a legitimate metaphor, because you know what we think of with people who are fruity, you know. So so they spread their guano and they cause other fruits to grow and everything. You need to stop the fruit from growing.
Yeah, but the only thing, okay, I take that back. There is something that does grow from the feces that leftist progressives and demon rats spread. That is chaos, anarchy, tyranny, insanity, lunacy, anti-Americanism. So, but I don't think that's the kind of thing we want to encourage the growth of, at least if you're moderately sane, don't you think?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, anyway, I just said I'd submit it for your consideration. Believe me, I love your show, Vince. I love you, brother. It's not a requirement, okay? You ain't got to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the establish staple of the show. You got the siren going, okay? So that's a recognizable feature, and probably you should keep it. I just want you at least every once in a while make an apologia to the fruit bats, because fruit bats do perform a useful function.
Yeah, well, to be honest with you, fruit bats are one of my favorite animals, to be honest with you. And I think actual fruit bats are pretty cool, you know. The reason why I use the word fruit bat, because a lot of people use ding bat and moon bat and everything, and I just use fruit bat because it just sounds funny. Fruit bat, you know, you're a fruit bat, you know. It just sounds funny to me and everything. I'm glad you like the fruit bat,
and I know you would want to be unfair to fruit bat, so I just thought I'd bring that up for your consideration, like I said. Now, let's get back to, Brother Penny here, that they want to charge with manslaughter on the train. Yeah, I noticed that Fat Alvin didn't submit it to a grand jury, because the grand jury might not return the kind of thing they want. So he decided he's just going to go ahead, bring an indictment on his own, bring the guy. But look, the problem on the subway is not that we have too many people willing to step up when people are in peril from lunatics and thugs on the subway. The problem actually is we probably have too few. This is highly unlikely to create more men in particular willing to step forward and do something when other people won't do anything that needs to be
done. That's right.
And that's the problem with this. It's not like we got a whole raft of so-called vigilantes. And by the way, he wasn't a vigilante, because vigilantes take illegal enforcement action. That is the definition of a vigilante. But the Penal Code of New York, Section 35 allows for a citizen to use force in self-defense of self or others when confronted with an imminent threat. Now, there would be a question about whether or not his application of force was reckless or not, but I don't think you're going to be able to prove that beyond a reasonable doubt in the court. I just don't.
Yeah.
I just don't.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, I'm glad to see this Marine, this ex-Marine is getting in a whole bunch of dough. Ron DeSantis is getting some dough up for him. Other people around the country get some dough. He has the very best legal defense, and I hope he does. I really hope he does. You know, I really hope he does. The facts, and now, if he said something during this thing that, you know, we don't know about, like, say, I'm going to choke this bastard till he dies. I mean, that put a different slant on things. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But if there ain't nothing like that.
I don't, I really don't think he had any intentions to do that.
I know. That's why they're going to call it negligent manslaughter or something like that, or reckless homicide or something. You know, they'll do something like that. I don't even think it's reckless. Yeah. Maybe negligent in saying, okay, you didn't let the hold up. Because as someone who has used a chokehold numerous times, and I found using a chokehold when you could apply it is better than whacking them with a baton all day long, and leaving all kinds of bruises and bumps and, you know, and then, you know, they're not accused of police brutality. So, I mean, chokeholds are very effective. I left before they were banned. I retired before they were banned in Illinois. So, I like to say, for a law enforcement officer, they are very effective. But when these people come talking about, well, he was a civilian, and even the police can't use a chokehold. Civilians are not bound by the regulations the police departments are.
No.
They're allowed to use any means of disposal that is reasonable to use to effect neutralizing the situation. They're not bound by regulations of police departments. He's a civilian.
That's
he's
right.
He's an ordinary citizen. He's an unsworn
right.
citizen. So, you know, if he wants to use a chokehold and, you know, use it properly and, but this guy had a history of drug abuse. It's kind of like with St. George of Fentanyl. We know that his drug abuse contributed to his death just as much, if not more, by the Minneapolis police at the time. At least as much, if not more. His compromised cardiovascular system, excited by the arrest, had every bit as much to do, I am certain, as did whatever Chauvin did by kneeling on his shoulder blades. And he didn't put his knee on his neck, but on his shoulder blade. Now, you could see Mr. Penny putting this guy in what they call a recovery position from a chokehold throughout the meeting. And he didn't put it on for 15 minutes. Because the whole, from start to finish, the cops were there within 6 minutes.
Yeah.
At most, he could have had it on that continuously for 3 minutes. But it doesn't appear that he had it on continuously for 3 minutes. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of facts that will be yet to come out. We'll see how the legal process goes, since Fat Alvin's determined to charge this man. But hey, as far as I'm concerned, I hope he gets the very best legal defense he can get.
Yeah, I hope so, too, you know. And I think they're still reeling from what happened about 40 years ago with Bernard Goetz. You know, that's the first time I heard the word vigilante. You know, Bernard Goetz, you know, he was being threatened by these youth. They were black. And I think he ended up shooting them. I forget how many he killed or whatever. But I think that's still pressuring a lot of people.
Bernard Goetz didn't kill anybody. He wounded them. One of them was permanently paralyzed. But a couple of them went on to get in trouble for rape, and another one got murdered in a gang shootout. So we know what kind of guy, we know what kind of people they were. Now, he didn't kill anybody at the time, though, but he did mess them up. And one, like they put one of them permanently in a wheelchair.
Yeah. And I think that started this whole, you know, we need to take up for the thugs era that we're going through now. You know, yeah, all they wanted to do was steal his money. That's all they cared about. He didn't have to shoot him. Yeah, you know, I mean,
the modern day religion.
They were talking about this one guy, you know, the guy that just got choked out by the Marine. They were saying that all he wanted was some food. He got killed because he was asking for food. That's not why he died. No one said, hey, why are you asking me for food? Come here. You know, I mean, that's not
he
what
he was a trained killer. He is a trained killer. These people, man, they are having a pearl clutching hysteria over this one.
I mean, for real.
Yeah, it's like,
you know,
people don't talk about saying that there was no black mass killers. So I was telling about the guy crashed the airplane, Southwest 1707.
Flight 1771 in 1987 or so. A gentleman named James Burke with a lengthy criminal history, who was an employee of Southwest Airlines. He was fired for embezzling money from the company, and he was very upset about it, and he smuggled on the plane a .44 Magnum revolver, and he then proceeded, when the aircraft was in flight with 43 people on a commuter flight from, I believe, Oakland to Los Angeles, somewhere in that region of California. He murdered the executive who was on the flight, because he planned this all out. He murdered the executive who fired him. He then murdered the stewardess who was trying to get to the cockpit and tell the pilots about it. Then he burst into the cockpit and apparently shot both of the pilots dead. He pushed forward on the control column, put the aircraft into an uncontrolled dive. It crashed and killed all 43 people on board the plane. Now, that's mass murder by any reckoning that I know of. But get this. The reason they know it was him is because when they found his body in the wreckage and the gun, part of his finger was still behind the trigger. He was holding the gun when the plane crashed, and when he got mangled, part of his finger remained in the trigger guard behind the trigger.
Wow.
His name was James Burke.
I never heard of that one. That's a new one to me.
Yeah, you know, everybody thinks about these black mass murders. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Only white men do that kind of thing. It's just not true.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what someone was telling me about that kid that shot the teacher in Newport News. You know, one of my coworkers was like, "Oh, you know, that was a white person." And like I said, I wasn't trying to make no argument because I was on the job. But I'm sitting there like, you know, I know I'm pretty sure it was a black kid. And then when I saw the mother this week, I said, "See, there you go. She was a black woman, and she had two black. I think she had a black lawyer and a white lawyer sitting on either side of her, and she's up there trying to make excuses for him, saying, you know, he was trying to ask for help from the teacher, and he threw his hands up and knocked her cell phone out of her hand and all that and everything." I said, "Now, see, this is why our kids act like a bunch of animals, because we got these parents who are always taking up for their kids, and then you got a lot of people want to sympathize with the parents, say, society has done them wrong." You know, I mean, this is why our kids act the way they do, you know, and they grow up to be men who go on subway trains and get choked out by Marines, and then people want to blame racism on it, you know.
Man, I mean, these narratives are becoming so depressing. They're so predictable. And they're so consistently full of it that it's just depressing to hear it, that so many people, without bothering to investigate the facts themselves, just imbibe it, swallow it, lap it up, and the beat goes on.
It's crazy, man. It really is. It's mind-boggling how people absolve themselves of common sense. You know, because common sense can teach you a lot of things. You know, common sense can teach you to hold back on judgment on something so you can figure out all the evidence, you know, surrounding a certain incident. But a lot of people just don't want to use common sense.
Well, you know, I better look at common sense like this. Common sense is the sort of thing that keeps you from getting hit by a car when you cross the street. You know, you look both ways.
Yeah.
That's kind of what common sense is. And a lot of people today have completely abandoned common sense in pursuit of narratives and grievances of every sort. Name the grievance, and they'll do it. And then expect the rest of us to bow down and kowtow to their neuroses. I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get in there in your neurotic bed. You got to be there by yourself.
I know that's right. And when I last did a show a couple of weeks ago, I was talking about Al Sharpton. Oh, gosh. Sometimes it hurts my head to even say that name. But Al Sharpton is thinking about suing McDonald's because, you know, they don't have enough black people. And they're talking about, you know, McDonald's is racist and all this crazy mess. And I said, Al Sharpton must be getting low on his funds, you know, because if he ever carries this out and he actually succeeds, is that money going to go to help black kids improve their education or improve black communities or anything like that? Nah, it's going to go right into his pocket. That's all. People don't put two and two together and say, "Wait a minute, this guy says he's arguing for us and everything. Look at how he dresses. Look at what he drives. Look at where he lives. I mean, this guy is a millionaire, you know, but we're sitting here, we're living paycheck to paycheck, and he's sitting in there, okay, he's going to sue McDonald's. Okay, he sued McDonald's. Yay, McDonald's no longer racist." But Al Sharpton still has the money. He's not going to use that to help improve your situation or or your communities or anything. Look, dude, try to get paid. I mean, Jesse Jackson, he shook down Toyota some years ago himself. You know, Toyota had to pay him like $700,000 a year. And someone asked him, said, why are you paying Jesse Jackson $700,000 a year? They said, well, that's just the cost of doing business. Are you serious? Are you outside of your freaking mind? And any black people.
Brother Vince, it's three big, huge grifts in the United States. The one, the big single grift is welfare, entitlement, grifting, and corruption, okay? Followed by Defense Department contracting, grifting, and corruption. And finally, in third place, but coming up fast, is the racial industrial complex. That's the biggest emerging grift of all. And people like Al Sharpton and all the rest of them, Benjamin Crump et al., they are in it for the money and the grift. It's all about the grift.
Right.
It ain't about civil rights anymore. It's about how much they can extort, how much money can they extort by relying upon and exacerbating white guilt and dumbass white liberals.
Yeah. That's all it is. That's all it's about, you know, them getting money. And we're sitting here, you know, and someone described it as these people take a loaf of bread, they crumble it up, and they give you the crumbs back, and you think they're doing something for you because they gave you the crumbs. But see, they keeping the rest of the loaf of bread. They just took a handful of bread out, crumbled it up, and threw it back at you, and you think they're doing something for you. But that's how these rascals get rich, and I don't know why no one has ever been enlightened to that fact that, wait a minute, you know.
They're enlightened to it. Look, the people who are being extorted know what time it is. They just got no guts. They're a bunch of cowards.
Yeah.
Or they're in on the grift themselves because they get a kickback.
That's
they know what time
that
it is.
Yeah.
They know this
yeah.
stuff is unwarranted. They know this call for reparations ain't got a legal or constitutional leg to stand on whatsoever. But they're going to keep doing it because they're – because the people today got no guts. They won't speak their mind. They won't say what's on their mind. They're afraid to support their honestly held beliefs. Because I don't know how these people call this country racist. And one of the things most people are scared to death of, especially if you're white, is being called a racist for any reason, fairly or unfairly.
I mean, for real.
Now, a racist country has no fear of being called racist.
That's right.
Vincent, look at that picture I sent you in your Facebook Messenger.
Okay.
And you see.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. You've got to be kidding me. Will you look at this,
this is a event in the streets. See, in Joe Biden at Howard University, declaring white supremacy being the biggest threat through the nation.
And see, look at this. See, this is.
You put that on Facebook. You have to send in a message direct to the person. They run you off if you try to put it out there and post it. But and see, Facebook and these media, they don't put that stuff out there. That is a major concern. Nobody's saying nothing. Where's the hate speech?
I mean,
these
for real.
These people walking around the public with a sign on their with a T-shirt painted "F white people."
Yeah, that's crazy.
That was kill white people.
And while we're sitting here talking about, you know, Sarge mentioned something about reparations. How about the display of hypocrisy in the state of Illinois' largest city, Chicago, the other day? People getting up, and I'm sitting here, and I had to chuckle. And, you know, this stuff is not funny, but I had to chuckle because these people, they're getting up, they're talking about how run down Chicago is, and folk are sitting there talking about, well, we can't just vote for people simply because they are black. And I'm sitting there like, you guys, man, the reason why Chicago is being run into the ground like it is because you all voted these rascals in the office. And they sit there, they act like they're ignorant to what these people were about. People have told them what they are about. And they want to sit there and call, you know, folks racist and you don't care and all this and everything. And the very person that you voted in is the one messing up your city. Because I can guarantee
you. Yeah, who do you think declared
out,
your city a sanctuary city? Who do you think did
exactly.
that?
Exactly. I mean, for real. And now they're over here,
they
complaining
were
about how
bragging about
city
how
is.
Proud they were to call Chicago a sanctuary city. They were boasting about it.
Exactly. And now, what's her name, Lightfoot, she's upset because Greg Abbott is sending, he's sending migrant, the immigrants into Chicago. And people are complaining because there's a hotel in Chicago where they won't allow anyone into that hotel except if you are an immigrant. People were trying to come into the hotel. They were like, nah, you can't come in here. This is for illegals and, you know. And these people up here complaining, oh, I couldn't do this and I couldn't do that. Well, you are the very person that voted these people in. And guess what? You're going to continue doing that. You know, this is the essence of stupidity.
Let me tell you something, brother. One of the most brilliant political tactics ever conceived was what Greg Abbott and Ron DeSantis did, shipping these illegal aliens all around the country, these sanctuary cities. It helped to focus the problem like almost nothing else could. And remember, y'all, these leftist sanctuary virtue signaling bunch of dummies are only getting a fraction of what they're getting down there on the border. And they can't cope. Man, this was a brilliant strategy. I got to give it to DeSantis and Abbott. It focused it and made these. It's like they did their own version of the Cloward Piven strategy. You know, Cloward Piven seeks to overwhelm the system. You know, overwhelm the system to make the United States live up to its promises and all this other stuff. Well, they did the same thing to these leftists. These leftist cities, these sanctuary cities. They're overwhelming their system. It's Cloward Piven in reverse. I love it. I love it. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're getting what they asked for. They asked for this. They're the ones that asked for this. And they sitting there talking about, well, y'all shouldn't be voting for people just because they're black. But that's exactly what you all did. Y'all voted for these people.
But they did more than just ask for it. They virtue signaled for it. They said, look at how wonderfully noble and generous and loving we are. How compassionate. How we care for the downtrodden. Give me your huddled, your poor, your tired, your oppressed, yearning to be free. Give them all to us. We want to be a sanctuary city for all of you. And Lord, I've been looking at that. They whining like little biatches have been struck by rocks. The hot dog, Pat, getting hit by the brick, they're howling. I just love it, man. It's beautiful.
Me and Sarge had a black man going to debate us Friday.
That didn't work out too well, boy.
And I say, this son of a gun, come on. He's one of the bays. You've heard of him, Vince, the B-E-Y.
Yeah.
And he carried that last name. I don't know. I think those people that follow Noble Drew Ali, I'm not sure. But he's going to be arguing with us about anthropological evidence about blacks ain't black and they're not African-American.
They colonized Africa. They colonized North America before Europeans ever got here.
And he said he's a lawyer. I asked him, I said, well, who did you get your law degree at? He named off. And I said, where is that at? Well, it ain't in part.
I want to know about this dicta in a private communique that he got from some Supreme Court justice. That's what I want to know.
Yeah, he said he got a communique, like Sarge says, from the Supreme Court. And I said, well, what case was it? Well, it don't have to be a case.
Well, I think, well, can you share the information with her?
Well,
see,
tell me
something. Know all these secrets.
Well, tell me something, Bianca. I mean, do you think this lawyer perhaps have ever heard of the term ex parte communication? Now, I know ex parte communication applies only to a case of which you speak about not in camera, meaning off the books with somebody where all the representatives in the case are not there to hear it. But even then, that the reason Supreme Court just don't like to give that sort of thing in private unless it's maybe to a member of their family whom they absolutely trust is for that very reason. They don't want anybody to be able to say that a Supreme Court just told me this in a letter that is written down in their own handwriting, I would assume, and a letter written to them that might affect the future ruling or be brought up in a future ruling. They don't do that.
That's so true.
Even though it's not exactly an ex parte communication, but it's close enough, so they like to avoid the, what they call the appearance of impropriety.
Oh, boy, I tell you.
The lawyer didn't understand that, you know, and I thought, well, you're a lawyer. No, I said, 23 years as a police officer. I dealt with hundreds of lawyers. I regularly communicated with a constitutional lawyer who argued six cases before the Illinois Supreme Court. He taught me a great deal about constitutional law.
Wow.
And by the way, he argued six cases successfully before the Illinois Supreme Court. So I said, no, I'm not a lawyer. But I got 23 years of law enforcement dealing with lawyers and trying to impeach my testimony on the stand. Yeah.
Mm-mm.
I love these people who love to act, especially leftists. Leftists love to do this. They love to act as high priests of all knowledge through which, you know, you have to go, you have to go through them in order to determine what the dogma is. You know,
yeah.
The high priests of all knowledge. Leftists love to portray themselves as that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and they act like they speak for all of us. And I tell these rascals, you don't speak for me. You don't speak for me. Don't even put me in on that. Yeah, I'm just doing this for my fellow black people. You know, black people this, and black people go through this every day and everything. Don't even put me in that group because, you know, you're not speaking to me. You're speaking foreign language to me.
Yeah. And they love to tell us what we don't understand. What you just don't understand? Or what am I failing to understand?
Yeah.
And what the knowledge you have, like, you have control over that I don't have.
Oh,
yeah.
You don't know that yourself. Like that woman was on Joe Brown's show Friday. He was all talking about we and us. We need to do this. It's for us. Until I checked her, then all of a sudden, that's me and I that she was talking about.
Yeah.
No, you're trying to create a segregated country in America is what you're trying to do. And you've been doing that forever, and it ain't going nowhere. Like I told her, but you talk about the curriculum. Parents can have whatever curriculum they want in school. But I know for sure because I was a member of the National Black United Front. I was a field coordinator for African Center Curriculum for the St. Louis chapter. And in Detroit, they started a lot of this, trying to get those these curriculums in public schools that they called African Center. Hell, in one school in Detroit, Medicine Barry, they had what was called an Indian Center curriculum. And in New York, they had one for Italians. Well, blacks wanted to have one. But the thing is, they walked away from it. Black parents say, we don't want this for our kids. In Detroit, not in Kansas City, you had kids say, I want to learn about everybody. They did. This newspaper. The kids said, I want to learn about everybody. In Kansas City, they had magnet schools, Latin magnet, Spanish magnet, where the kids spoke those languages all day in school. They had African Center, and they just about gone. So that stuff is good for the people at the time. But it don't last because people walk away from it.
Yeah.
These kids are my grandson told me, he said, Papa, I ain't no African. I'm American. Now, you know something. It was my grandson told me that.
Wow.
They
want to
be separate.
They was complaining about segregation. Now they want to be segregated.
I mean, they're not talking about self-segregation
because I got no problem when anybody wants to self-segregate as long as the government isn't doing it and they, you know, voluntarily decide that's what they want to do. I don't think that's a good idea, but it's up to them. Should have liberty to do that sort of thing. But they want to have it imposed on us with the help of the government. And that's where I'm going to draw the line.
Exactly. You know, and see, too, we all know that, you know, birds of a feather flock together, you know, 9 times out of 10. You know, if you're a black person, you're going to congregate with other black folks and everything. I really don't see that as being segregation, so to speak. You know, I think that's human nature, but, you know, you do have some people say, well, you know, I just want to hang out with the black people, you know, and I think that's wrong myself. But when you get the government in on it, see, that's where everything gets messed up. You know, I hear people say that the most segregated place in America are our churches. I don't think the churches are actually segregated. I just think a lot of people, they like to hang out with people of you know, who look like them, you know, and that's just human nature. But then you do have some white churches, you have some black churches. They're like, you know what? Hey, you know, we want to, you know, stick together. We want to stick together in the group and everything. But when it speaks of hypocrisy, when you sit there and you talk about, oh, segregation, 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 but then you turn around and you want to do the same thing, you know, the rules for thee, not for me type of deal. You know, it's all right when we do it, but when you do it, you know, it's wrong, you know, and that's part of what's messing up everything.
Yeah. Well, see, that's why you got your show. And that's why me and Bianca call in, because we want people just think slightly, think a little bit outside the box, will you? Stop being locked into these ruts of narratives.
Yeah, really. Exactly. And, you know, people get on me for talking about the black folks. They, why you always talking about black folks? Why you always talking about black folks? And I'd be like this. Well, if I had my show up and all I talked about were white folks, would you be just as upset about that? You know, and the reason why I talk about black folks a lot because I'm a black man myself. But you know the people who say that,
you know what it is? They know that these issues are not raised amongst black people. When I was growing up, I don't know how many times I heard this, and Bianca, you probably heard it too. Black men cannot be homosexuals. There are just about no black homosexuals. Now, I used to hear that all the time. That's what they say. For the most part, that's something only white men do.
Yep. But look,
I
heard it
regularly. So we talk about black men, because black people won't want to talk about the little bigotries and little prejudices that black people have, and they are reluctant to talk about it, because after all, you know, black people can't be racist now, can they?
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
I had people tell me that black people can't be Christian.
Yeah, they can't be racist. I used to argue that with some people, so now they don't fail back after we hit them with enough information. You know, the thing they hate about me and Sarge, we know your answers. I know where you got your information from. We know what you're going to say. We know what you're going to do. And they don't like that.
Yeah.
Who in the hell would
thought
that you would bring up a mass black murderer back in 1987?
Yeah, exactly.
It's all in the newspaper. What about that other serial killer that killed 93 people?
Yeah, Samuel Little. Yeah, he's the most prolific serial killer in the 20th and 21st century yet.
Wow.
What about the
white black? I mean, he got, what's his name? What was that? Ted Bundy. He got Ted Bundy beat like about three score.
Yeah, but you have a black man that comes to a white church and shoot it up and kill people. Nobody here say nothing about that. But they all alone, that other guy. It was in, I forget what state he was in. Dylan Roof. They always bring him up. I heard Akeem Jeffries bring up Kyle Rittenhouse. I hit him hard with some stuff.
Yeah.
Man, Kyle Rittenhouse had to be one of the most Kyle Rittenhouse had to be one of the most perfect cases of self-defense ever caught on camera, and these people trying to put him in jail. It was astounding to me.
Yeah.
You, got the law, look up the law of self-defense, you got it all on video, and you're still trying to prosecute this young man?
Yeah.
What a world we live in today.
Yep. And the thing about it, he didn't shoot one black person.
And then
you got
a prosecutor saying, and then that woman, that stupid fat prosecutor saying, well, every once in a while you just got to take a beating. He actually said that.
Man, see, that's crazy mess. But anyway, well, we getting down to the time to close out the show and everything. Just want to remind everybody, I won't be having a show next Saturday. My wife and I, we are going to Goldsboro, North Carolina. We are going to an air show, and we're going to see the Blue Angels perform and everything, and we need to get away from Dodge and whatever. So next Saturday, I won't be having a show, but should be having a show the next Saturday, the 27th. And, of course, the next Saturday after that, I won't have a show because that will be the first of the month. But anyway, folks, I want to shout out to Sarge and Pianchi. Also, my sister, Retta, up in New York. Bring It Boye. I think that's Suzette down in Southern California. Thank you guys for coming on the show. Thank you for adding your $2.50 worth of rhetoric on this show and everything. And appreciate you guys. You all take care of yourselves out there. Stay safe and whatever. And I should see you all in another 2 weeks. This is Vincent E. Brown. I am signing off. And until the next time, I'll see you on the rebound. You all have a great week.